Chapter 37.
I couldn't help feeling a little bit smug as I squeezed the bright red rubber ball out through the incision in the dog's stomach. We got enough small animal work in Darrowby to make a pleasant break from our normal life around the farms, but not enough to make us blasé. No doubt the man with an intensive town practice looks on gastrotomy as a fairly routine and unexciting event. But as I watched the little red ball roll along the table and bounce on the surgery floor, a glow of achievement filled me. The big lolloping red setter pup had been brought in that morning. His mistress said that he had been trembling, miserable, and occasionally vomiting for 2 days, ever since their little girl's ball had mysteriously disappeared. Diagnosis had not been difficult. I inverted the lips of the stomach wound and began to close it with a continuous suture. I was feeling pleasantly relaxed, unlike Tristan, who had been unable to light a woodbine because of the ether which bubbled in the glass bottle behind him and out through the anesthetic mask which he held over the dog's face. He stared moodily down at the patient, and the fingers of his free hand drummed on the table. But it was soon my turn to be tense because the door of the operating room burst open and Siegfried strode in. I don't know why it was, but whenever Siegfried watched me do anything, I started to go to pieces. Great waves seemed to billow from him. Impatience, frustration, criticism, irritation. I could feel the waves buffeting me now, although my employer's face was expressionless. He was standing quietly at the end of the table, but as the minutes passed, I had the growing impression of a volcano on the bubble. The eruption came when I began to stitch the deep layer of the abdominal muscle. I was pulling a length of catgut from a glass jar when I heard a sharp intake of breath.
"God help us, James!" cried Siegfried. "Stop pulling at that bloody gut! Do you know how much that stuff costs per foot? Well, it's a good job you don't, or you'd faint dead away. And that expensive dusting powder you've been chucking about, there must be about half a pound of it inside the dog right now."
He paused and breathed heavily for a few moments.
"Another thing. If you want to swab, a little bit of cotton wool is enough. You don't need a square foot at a time like you've been using. Here, give me the needle, let me show you."
He hastily scrubbed his hands and took over. First he took a minute pinch of the iodoform powder and sprinkled it daintily into the wound, rather like an old lady feeding her goldfish. Then he cut off a tiny piece of gut and inserted a continuous suture in the muscle. He had hardly left himself enough to tie the knot at the end, and it was touch and go, but he just made it after a few moments of intense concentration. This process was repeated about 10 times as he closed the skin wound with interrupted silk sutures, his nose almost touching the patient as he laboriously tied off each little short end with forceps. When he had finished, he was slightly pop-eyed.
"Right, turn off the ether, Tristan,"
he said as he pulled off half an inch of wool and primly wiped the wound down. He turned to me and smiled gently. With dismay, I saw his patient look spreading over his face.
"James, please don't misunderstand me. You've made a grand job of this dog, but you've got to keep an eye on the economic side of things. I know it doesn't matter a hoot to you just now, but someday, no doubt, you will have your own practice, and then you'll realize some of the worries I have on my shoulders."
He patted my arm, and I steeled myself as he put his head on one side, and a hint of roguishness crept into his smile.
"After all, James, you'll agree it is desirable to make some sort of profit in the end."
It was a week later, and I was kneeling on the neck of a sleeping colt in the middle of a field. The sun was hot on the back of my neck as I looked down at the peacefully closed eyes, the narrow face disappearing into the canvas chloroform muzzle. I tipped a few more drops of the anesthetic on a sponge and screwed the cap onto the bottle. He had had about enough now. I couldn't count the number of times Siegfried and I have enacted this scene. The horse on his grassy bed, my employer cutting away at one end while I watched the head. Siegfried was a unique combination of born horseman and dexterous surgeon, with which I couldn't compete. So I had inevitably developed into an anaesthetist. We liked to do the operations in the open. It was cleaner, and if the horse was wild, he stood less chance of injuring himself. We just hoped for a fine morning, and today we were lucky. In the early haze, I looked over the countless buttercups. The field was filled with them, and it was like sitting in a shimmering yellow ocean. Their pollen had powdered my shoes and the neck of the horse beneath me. Everything had gone off more or less as it usually did. I had gone into the box with the colt, buckled on the muzzle underneath his head collar, then walked him quietly out to a soft, level spot in the field. I left a man at the head holding a long shank on the head collar and poured the first half ounce of chloroform onto a sponge, watching the colt, snuffling and shaking his head at the strange scent. As the man walked him slowly round, I kept adding a little more chloroform, till the colt began to stagger and sway. This stage always took a few minutes, and I waited confidently for Siegfried's little speech, which always came about now. I was not disappointed.
"He isn't going to go down, you know, James. Don't you think we should tie a foreleg up?"
I adopted my usual policy of feigning deafness, and a few seconds later the colt gave a final lurch and collapsed on his side. Siegfried, released from his enforced inactivity, sprang into action.
"Sit on his head," he yelled. "Get a rope on that upper hind leg and pull it forward. Bring me that bucket of water over here. Come on, move!"
It was a violent transition. Just moments ago, peace and silence. And now, men scurrying in all directions, bumping into each other, urged on by Siegfried's cries.